Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. This is episode number 30. Off the back of a bank holiday weekend, we're feeling a bit groggy between us, particularly in the case of JB.
Indeed I am. Hello, Tim.
Sound it, mate. Are you going to make it through this?
Ah, yes, I found the button as well. My headphones are on now.
And Phil, you're right.
Yeah, hi, Tim.
And we've been getting some sunshine where we are. Hopefully you had a bit of that as well. Now, we've got plenty coming up on this podcast. Rugby Oki, another singing rugby player, a roundup of the Easter weekend, feast of rugby action, and some probably extremely blasphemous Easter-related rugby shenanigans and plenty more besides. But in fact, let's just start being potentially blasphemous. So we just come off the back of Easter weekend, not wanting to make light of the celebration. What about some rugby resurrections? Oh,
is this
more like Halloween? It's a bit Halloweeny, this.
Is this music to celebrate the successful prosecution of criminals, like we should do at Easter?
What?
That's what Easter's all about, isn't it? The successful accusation and prosecution of criminals on crosses.
I'll tell you what, laws and where the right decisions have been made is definitely going to come up a bit later on in the podcast. Rugby resurrections, so players who have been resurrected, whether it's their career, whether they've come out of absolutely nowhere and suddenly become a star. Can you think of any good rugby resurrections?
I can think of loads.
Yeah, it's quite a few.
Johnny Wilkinson. I think that's the best one recently.
It's pretty phenomenal. Body wreck, World Cup winner 2003, total body wreck.
Didn't play for nearly 4 years.
I know.
Didn't play internationally, yeah, for a huge length of time. But then made it back for the 2007 World Cup.
Played like a hero.
And then European Cup winner. So yeah, there was a lot of people that thought he would never play again. It looks like he has played his last rugby.
Well, he's about to play his last rugby. He certainly played his last international game.
Yeah, certainly. That was a great one. I mean, the other England player, World Cup winner, that instantly sprang to my mind was Steve Thompson with a supposedly career-ending neck injury when he was at Brive and got compensation and then paid it all back to resurrect his career.
I wonder paid that back.
Well, he got like £500,000 payout, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because he was on a £200,000 contract for 4 years or whatever.
Who was he? George Smith.
George Smith, is it?
Oh, yes.
Came back, was Brimbury's player of the season, and then was picked to play against the Lions.
So cruelly injured just before he would have actually been...
And then was immediately crucified again.
Yeah.
his was really incredible, because he was Brimbury's for like 10 years, and named player's player for either 8 or 9 out of the 10 years.
Unbelievable.
Then went to...
Japan.
France for a bit.
Oh,
went to Toulon,
right.
Then to Japan... Then back to Stade Francais for a bit.
Did he?
Then back to Japan. Yeah, he had like a stint. And then he was injury cover for the Brumbies for like 3 months on a short-term contract in the Japanese off-season and ended up getting a call-up 4 years after his last international
real
cap.
Real fairy tale.
Shane
story.
Williams came back to play Lions from Japan.
Oh yeah.
Joan Smith.
What was his story?
Toulon. He retired in... 2 years ago. Because
really bad injury.
Because of a knee injury.
Oh, you put Schalberger in that category.
Yeah, although he's back playing. Well, he's obviously back playing.
Yeah. Jason Robinson came back for Fylde. Does that count?
But he only played home games. Ooh, he wouldn't play away.
He was on an unbelievable amount of money if what I heard was true. Oh. There's a couple of other ones, recent ones as well. Stephen Ferris.
Of course.
18 months out of the game.
Really glad to see him back.
I hope he is back properly because I think he missed the game either this weekend or last weekend because of an ankle injury.
When you think Ireland Six Nations champions and have Sean O'Brien and Stephen Ferris to come back into the reckoning in the back row,
And then Marnie, of course, because he's out now.
That's a pretty impressive.
They're two of the most destructive ball carrying back rows in Europe.
Yeah.
And Matthew Rees. another one who had...
Oh, yeah, of course.
2 years out with testicular cancer.
That is and then recently made his comeback for Cardiff Blues. A fantastic story.
Here's a question for you.
I suppose Tom Croft has had one comeback. Not another.
From
a
neck.
But I wouldn't necessarily say it's a resurrection
Which
in the same way as some of the
others. Who's recently retired before his time would you like to see come back?
Ooh. So someone who is now retired but could potentially... They're still of an age.
Of an age where if they were fit, they could come back.
I was looking at... it's probably not a really flash one. I was looking at David Flatman the other day because Duncan Bell is back at 39.
Oh, yes.
And I saw David Flatman on ITV Rugby and I thought, I wonder how old he is. Could he...
Is that the David Flatman that now has... like sticks attached to his arms and always holds his arms like dead straight on TV. Right by his sides. Give it a go.
He's 34.
Is that all he is?
Yeah.
Really?
He could still be doing a great job for
someone. For,
yeah, anyone.
I would have said the ultimate one historically would be Barry John, who was one of the most mercurial, amazing tens ever to play the game. He retired. He played 25, imagine the equivalent player, what it would be, but 25 caps for Wales, 5 caps for the British Lions. He retired from rugby aged 27 as Wales' highest point scorer, citing the pressure of fame and expectation the reason for his decision.
It was like Halfpenny hanging up his boots now.
Yeah.
James Hook. In fact, they've pretty much retired James Hook anyway. Yeah. Poor James.
Different sport, but didn't Bjorn Borg do something similar?
Yeah.
He was like 26 and had won everything.
There was one who's just come back into my mind. Tom Rees for Wasps. Like, was the future England seven.
Yeah. And they were talking about him as England captain as well, weren't they?
Yeah,
he
were.
He was a quality player. And
lots and lots of injuries, though, wasn't it?
James Forrester is the other one who retired far too young for my liking.
We've not mentioned Victor Matfield.
Oh, yes. What's the story with Victor Matfield, if anyone's missed this, Phil?
After the 2011 World Cup, I think he retired. He was the most capped second row ever, I think, 110 caps. And he's had 2 years where he's been doing some kind of pundit work for South African TV and a coaching role in the Bulls. He's now 37, and at the start of this season, he signed a 2-year deal to play for the Bulls for the next 2 years with, I think... potentially the intention to play for the Springboks again ahead of the World Cup next year.
And of course, this goes on and on and on, but Bob Skinstad did the same thing.
Did he?
Yeah. He came up. Does Gavin Henson count? Because he tends to kind of go missing on 5 minutes and then shows up again about 70, 76 minutes.
I'm sorry, not wanting to be too blasphemous, but he gets crucified by the press every now and then.
Exactly. And actually, he has retired, so...
And he turns the other cheek to Carl Ferns.
Indeed he does. Well done, Tim.
Just on the resurrection, it also got me thinking of like the greatest comebacks from a game point of view. Like, what matches were there, some incredible comebacks? And the two that sprung to my mind were the Leinster-Northampton Heineken Cup final 2011.
Leg, yep.
Wow.
Oh, no. Not the second
No.
Okay.
The final in 2011, when it was 22-6 to Northampton. They'd scored 3 tries to 0 at half-time. And then Johnny Sexton apparently gave an unbelievable halftime team talk. He scored 2 tries himself, got 3 conversions and slotted 2 penalties in the second half to score, it was something like 27 unanswered points and really win. And the other one was it was Wales-Scotland in the 2010 Six Nations.
Yes.
When, with 10 minutes to go, Scotland were 10, sorry, with 3 minutes to go, Scotland were 10 points up.
What?
Halfpenny scored a try to reduce it to 3. And then with 30 seconds left, I think it was Lee Byrne, slotted a kick, or Stephen Jones slotted a kick, whoever it was, slotted a kick to level it. And Scotland just had to...
Didn't kick it out.
Kill the game from the restart, and they didn't. Wales recycled it, and 20 phases later, Shane Williams went under the sticks to win the game.
Amazing. Well, I think we managed to get through that without actually offending anyone of a particularly religious persuasion, to be honest.
Let's see how the rest of the podcast goes.
I'm not sure. The look on JB's face right now, I'm not sure we'll continue that. But anyway, we'll carry on. I think we should turn our attention to the feast of rugby that was happening while we were gorging and putting ourselves into a chocolate-induced coma. There was a load of quality rugby going on. So let's quickly have a little natter about the Aviva Premiership, which is hotting up. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with Tigers Quins.
Okay.
All right. So it was the Friday night match, wasn't it? Now, I do believe if we go back to last week's podcast, I did say I was very impressed with Quinns away at Sale Sharks, and I tip them to beat Leicester just.
Did you say that?
I did.
Yeah, and I said I thought Leicester would win reasonably comfortably.
Yeah, I almost certainly picked wrong. It doesn't matter which way I would have picked. I know for a fact I would have picked wrong.
The game was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Leicester were wearing their sweet wrapper kits.
Oh, that was an awful. There was a few awful kits on show. We have talked about this being the golden age of kits this year, and there are some fantastic kits, but Leicester's away kit is one of the worst. It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah, let's get onto some bad kits in a bit, but the game was very good. Danny Kerr and Mike Brown.
Oh, yeah.
They're both playing absolutely superb rugby. Tuolagi and Gonova as well, looking so dangerous every time they get the ball.
Was it last Harlequin's try to put him over, the
with
Mike
Brown
one?
Mike Brown, yeah.
And you can see the Leicester defence drifting, and it's man-on-man defence on Mike Brown. I'm thinking, when was the last time Mike Brown didn't beat the first defender? Probably early 2000s.
When was the last time he didn't take a high ball?
Yeah, he's definitely going over. The Nicky Gonova try, to start with, was a farce. You've got to ref it in real time. But that ball, not didn't go forward once, it went forward twice. And if the ref had just given it, he'd say, yeah, fair enough, because watching Tim Wigglesworth run is tragic. But if he just gives it, he gives it. But he didn't. He went back to the video ref and then didn't let the video ref actually answer the question.
Now, this happened in the London Irish game as well.
Yeah, I think he did.
Well, did
no, he?
He
did let the video ref, in this instance, he let the video ref comment, but the video ref got it wrong. Because it looked to me and to you, Jay, like it was two forward passes.
Yeah. Oh, that's just such idiot.
That whole forward pass law is really...
Did the hands go back, but the ball went forward?
A pass can be made backwards, but can still travel significantly forwards. Mm. Just because of physics.
Yeah, that is... It only really comes into effect when someone's running at full speed. These were men who were kind of being tackled as... Yeah. So they stopped dead.
The other one was the Tom Holmes... Is it Tom Holmes or Tom
Homer? Tom Homer.
Tom Homer gave a pass and then gets absolutely crunched by someone. And because he shudders, he stops to a shuddering halt and then goes backwards and the ball's travelling at pace. On the replay, it was like, yeah, that's forward. Well, now I think that was less forward.
No, it wasn't forward. Now, I don't know how to explain this in words. There's a video that we got tweeted that explains it brilliantly, how you can pass backwards but the ball actually travels forward.
Because you're travelling forward at a rate of knots.
Yeah, if you're running forward, you pass backwards, the ball still actually ends up travelling forward because of the speed that you were running at. If you carry on running, the ball looks like it's gone backwards. No. If you stop dead straight after you've passed, whether you get hit or tackled, it appears that the ball goes
that's
forward.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
And that's what happened with Tom Homer. That was not a forward pass.
I agree
in that situation, but I don't agree with the Ed Slater, because he wasn't travelling at a great rate of knots.
No.
And he was stopped.
So they got the two decisions wrong.
Yeah.
Both decisions wrong.
Yeah, it looked like it to me.
It was a try for London Irish, and it wasn't a try for
Thank
Leicester.
Thank God we got these highly qualified video refs making these right decisions.
Or not making
or
any
not
decision.
Making the right decisions.
Phil, a fair play to you. You brought this up months ago about it irritating you. Going to TMO and then the referees going, I've seen it, it's all right, I've got it.
It's the language as well. It makes me tear my hair
I have a decision
off.
For you. I've just seen that. I'm going with this. No, there's got to be a rule on this.
How about this? How about just the general use of language? So it's usually, Tim, yeah, JB here. Who do they think is going to answer? Are they going to use the International Space Station? Wrong channel. So they do the, can we confirm, J here. And then they go, may I? Please, may I? And then you'd have to respond by saying...
So you're saying, may you check the last pass, it was forward?
I have a report for you, Tim. As if you've just got a whole group of solicitors together to compile...
Got a dossier. We've just had it rubber stamped by the legal team. Yeah, you're right.
No, I've actually seen it on big screen. Thank you, Tim. Thank you.
Yeah.
He may award the try. Oh, what's the other one that we heard this week? Obviously and clear. No.
Yeah, there was no obvious and clear reason why you cannot award the try.
Yeah.
That was a couple of times used, but used incorrectly as well, because there was a clear and obvious reason why it shouldn't be awarded.
Yeah, so they're just... And also, if you look at clear and obvious, there's no point in using clear and obvious in the same statement. I don't know why this is so difficult.
I mean, I'm glad we've got TMOs, and I'm glad we have the facility.
I think,
thankfully, in the case of Quinns Leicester, it was the right result of the match. It didn't affect it, but... I can imagine London Irish are feeling pretty sore because they scored a try that was disallowed and Northampton were given a try that should have been disallowed.
What's the other noticeable big play from that game, which I just mentioned quickly, was that held up try by Leicester. That was awesome.
Where Alan stopped him.
Alan
and
Tuilagi.
Tuilagi.
But to be fair to him, almost everything you said about what you saw live about Quinns was exactly
the speed.
Exactly
and Danny
Kerr,
a massive
exactly
part of that's Danny Kerr. Just the speed that he gets the ball away from contact. And I've got to say, I don't think he's a seven. I think he will play seven for England because Tom Wood at six is a quality player. But the amount of work Chris Robshaw does, you cannot fault his effort.
And Wallace.
His work rate, yeah.
Yeah, Wallace is a good player.
Shall we talk about the next game?
Yeah.
As I've called it, Kittageddon.
Kittageddon, what's that?
It was
the Stinger.
Wasp Gloucester.
Oh, God, yeah. It was horrible, Kits.
I would say.
That was terrible.
If we got the general population and, you know, say a sample of 100 and put me in this 100, I'd say I was pretty up to date with my rugby knowledge. I'd say, you know, not great, but okay. It took me a good 30 to 40 seconds to work out who the hell was playing. Gloucester didn't look like anyone that I recognised. And as for what... Sports relief is the most confused idea that I've ever heard of. Is it comedy or is it sports? And how do you get serious sports to be funny? I'll give you a clue, you can't. So they've got their stupid sports relief kit on. I didn't have a clue what was going on.
That was St George's Day kit, wasn't it? Or was it sport relief?
Well, it's got a big sports relief button on
oh,
the back.
Oh, right,
of it.
Okay.
They should make them run. They should make them run red noses or something.
There's a few clubs that have been wearing sport relief socks over the last few games with those like lace up boots on the front of them.
Yeah. Just stop
like
it.
A corset.
It's not funny. It's not endearing. You know, it doesn't enhance the appeal of either relief or sports. I just don't understand it, and it ruins a lot of good kits.
It's quite a good game, though.
Yes, it was a good game.
Some good tries. Some good running.
Mm-hmm. Or
just terrible Gloucester as well.
I'm looking forward to bulking up that pack, because actually I think that the backs are really quite good.
Backs are really good.
I think they've got a few guys who they can get rid of. Tindall would be the obvious one there. I know he only does a job there from now, but he needs to go.
I think they've had the worst recruitment of any team in the Aviva Premiership. They haven't sorted out their front row.
Nope.
The second row they brought in just hasn't worked.
Just awful.
Yeah, and Kvezic is only starting to play reasonably well.
Kvezic all season has been an absolute nightmare.
He's still a penalty machine.
Yeah.
But good news, they got rid of Akapusi Quera. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
World-class Fijian back row.
Yeah. But we've got Kvezic. Wonderful.
What about those Sale Sharks? Who predicted that? I mean, a couple of stats on this game, which I thought you'd like. I know you like a stat or two.
Yeah. Yes, please.
It is the first time a team in the Aviva Premiership has scored 50 points since May 2012. And it's the highest ever score for Sale Sharks in the Premiership.
Fact.
There's some facts for you there.
Good facts.
And Exeter have never had 50 points put on them at home in 27 seasons of league rugby.
Fact.
Well,
so Exeter were using their, tomahawk, but Sale bought a piece of 2x4 timber because they were thoroughly taken to the woodshed and given a good beating. We've got...
the first try scorer, Michael Patterson... New Zealand born.
Yeah.
Played in Wales. English qualified.
Is he?
On form.
Are you sure?
Not yet, though, is he?
I think it's on heritage, not residency.
If he lived in England when he was playing in Wales.
Oh, that might be it. Andy Farrell was at that match, and and word is he was watching Cipriani and Patterson, and you probably have to say on form, Patterson is knocking on the door very loudly, as is Cipriani.
Do you think, that Sale have started badly and got progressively better? Because all they've done is bought, like, Eastern European monsters, and they're finally learning how to play the game. So you've got Ostrakov, who's a monster, and you've got...
Kobolas.
Who is just incredible.
Think about your junior rugby when there's always a player of the season award and then there was always like a coach's...
Most improved.
Coach's player or most improved. Yeah. The most improved player in the Premiership is Vadim Kobolas.
Oh, he's awesome.
He's a...
They were just smashing the Exeter scrum. But they did the same to Bath. And we all know my feelings on Bath. They're a damn good pack.
Mm. Watching that Exeter Sale game, though, it was like watching kind of under-13s when you've got... One team who were like the best in the county or the best in the region, and one team who were
Exeter,
who are just a load of kids who've never really played rugby before.
It's really odd. Exeter haven't. They've only won three games out of their last 13 since they beat Sale in November.
That's ridiculous.
Which is just not Exeter like.
Yeah, it's not. And they're Exeter, like, they're always such a good unit, such a tight knit team, and they would always like make their first up tackles and always like work as a unit. And in that game, they just looked disjointed and kind of
forlorn.
Individuals, yeah, just falling off tackles.
Exeter, Sale, Dern.
Irish must be absolutely so frustrated and kicking themselves. To be 24-0 down at half-time, they just shot themselves in the foot with some errors and a bit of fortune in Northampton's case. Irish had another one of their second-half comebacks, but they'll be kicking themselves because they could have had another scout there.
Tom Homer looked awesome.
He did look good when he came on.
He looked better than James O'Connor. Every time he had the ball in hand, he was attacking the line.
And Shane Geraghty, where's he been for the last couple of years?
Yeah, basically rugby purgatory somewhere. Mm.
Jay made a comment about Shane Geraghty's hair while we're watching.
It is tinting.
It is awful.
It's like a newborn.
It's like he's 6 months. If he just keeps growing it like that, 6 months away from an Andy Goud.
He'd be lucky to be as good as Andy Goode.
Yeah, it could be good for his career, that.
It is a bad Barnet. It is a bad Barnet.
Well, have you got any inside information on the kind of team spirit and stuff after that loss?
I can't comment.
But have a guess if someone had told you what they'd be saying.
Okay, well, if I were, I'd probably be quite angry at JP Doyle, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think I'd be quite irritated by JP Doyle. If I were part of the Irish setup, I think I'd be extremely frustrated by JP Doyle.
I could understand.
Who played at the rec? Bath.
Bath and Worcester.
Bath, Worcester. Another spirited Worcester match, but I mean, they're down now. That's it.
Yeah.
Because Newcastle got a good bonus point defeat. Well,
the thing that strikes me about Bath, is there any club with a stranger selection of scrum halves?
Mickey Young, Stringer,
yeah,
and Martin Roberts.
That is odd.
It's not exactly a staple of talent. I love the way Stringer's playing, but well, who would have guessed?
Particularly with the sort of riches and resources Bath have got.
Yeah, it's interesting. Stringer could have made our resurrection.
Absolutely. You could.
Discussion actually, because he was like, what was it, 3 or 4 seasons ago? Was
Newcastle kind of jobbing about.
He was like third choice at Munster and going nowhere and ready for retirement. And then he got a short-term contract at Newcastle, played really well. Everyone kind of showed people why he was so good for so long. And then Bath took him on.
I thought Worcester in this game were actually quite competitive. And if it wasn't for the most ridiculous player in the entire Premiership scoring a last-minute try, can anyone guess who that might be? Matt Banahan. There is a direct correlation to how many tattoos you have and how boring you actually are. I know no one who tries to cultivate a look and is actually a genuinely interesting person. But anyway, we'll come back to that. They played really well, and I thought that Pennell looked quality.
Oh, he is.
Very, very good. Really, I hope he doesn't stay.
They're recruiting loads of players in spite of being relegated. Dean Ryan is actually obviously managing to persuade people that his journey is one worth going on, and they do seem to have quite a lot of good young players. So
who goes first, Dean Ryan or David Moyes?
I think by the time this goes up, Moyes will be gone. So I think they're going to stick with Dean Ryan. I think you mentioned about Banahan's tattoos and stuff. I think there's a potential crusade that we, the Egg Chasers, with the help and support of our loyal people listening, and thank you very much for that. I think we should have a socks up crusade. Particularly backs. I hate socks down.
Yeah.
Well, I hate socks down.
Interesting you should say this. I went to watch RGC. Now, in case you don't already know who RGC are, RGC are hopefully be the next Welsh region. But until that point, they're a very good team in North Wales who hopefully will go up to the Premiership next year, play Cardiff and that lot. And they were playing a team, I can't remember their name, but their winger looked incredible. He was about 11 stone wet through, balding slightly. Very, very good going sideways, and not ineffectively, but you know, like when you just can't be caught. Socks around his ankles, and then he had his shirt untucked. And this is the era of tight shirts now. His shirt was baggy, untucked, and over his shorts. And I thought,
oh, wow.
That's how you know you're cool.
But like Joe Simpson would look so much better as a player if he pulled his socks up. Yep. Jordan Turner Hall, he wears his socks down, it irritates me. I want a socks up
but
policy.
But so did
Latham.
Latham, yeah.
Latham, yeah. The incredible Australian fullback.
He was really good. But
I do agree. I used to, like, age group rugby, I always used to have my socks around my ankles, and then I've smartened up my act.
I like mine up. Gavin Henson has his has his up, I have mine up. That's just how it goes.
Right, let's move on. We'll be getting into looking ahead to the weekend's rugby, and it's the semi-finals in Europe to look forward to. Premiership takes a week off, so we'll get back to that in due course. But we have had some people getting in touch, and you can get in touch anytime you want and throw any thoughts your way about anything you hear or anything just generally rugby-based. At Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. And we've had quite a bit. Let's dip into our mailbag. Firstly, there was quite a lot of people enjoying the picture of JB that we posted to celebrate passing 1,000 followers on Twitter. If you haven't seen it, lovely. How would you describe that picture of JB? I think it's basically you showing your true love for Jacques Berger.
It's me showing what a man I am. Every Christmas, I go over to Anglesey and I have a swim in the Menai Straits. That's what it was.
At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, go and have a look. Also, in reaction to the politics 15 from last time out, now we picked a 15 from politicians and world leaders and people related to politics and how they would fit into a rugby team. Greg Neal says Bill Clinton should have been in the row and points out that Bill Clinton and JFK and George W. Bush all played rugby union.
I think it's a bit of an upper class thing. It
seems to be, yeah.
They're like within colleges.
Yeah, Banana Tom actually posted a picture of George Bush in his college rugby 15 attire. Which is not a big indictment for rugby in America.
Well, it is.
Raw's got in touch.
The Commander-in-Chief playing rugby. What are you on about?
Raw's got in touch and said, Franklin Roosevelt on the wing. Well, the lad had wheels.
Very, very good. Very good indeed.
Higgs pointed out that Paddy Ashdown deserved a place just for his hardness and SBS and Marines. I didn't know that about Paddy Ashdown.
Yeah, Paddy Ashdown at one point had more power, I think, in Kosovo than the Prime Minister had over here.
Wow.
Yeah.
There was a tweet as well suggesting that we should move Hitler from where you had him as inside centre, JB, to
outside
the
centre.
Wing because outside centre to the wing because he had a good goose step.
Oh, good. It's still effective inside centre, but point taken.
So at Rugby Podcast, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. Michael Dunning got in touch on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. Thank you. He's a fan of Connacht Rugby in Northern Ireland, and their new signing is from the Auckland Blues hooker come prop, who's affectionately known as the Freak, Tom McCartney. And Tom McCartney, whilst at the Blues, recorded this song, his version of Super Freak, with the help of some of his teammates. This is Rugby Oki just celebrating. And once again, rugby players do love a bit of a sing song. He's a very freaky guy who runs the ball right up the blind side. And so the real is super freaky try.
Won't you let him run by? Has he changed the words? He likes to smash
it. Well done, JB. Well spotted.
I'm not a big song guy.
He says his squats is his all-time favourite.
Sounds like a fun guy. Sounds like he'd get on with Phil. How do you rate his squats? Yeah, we've heard enough of that.
And there's all the Auckland Blues dancing with him.
Well, enjoy Connacht.
Yeah. We'll move on. Right. Sorry about that. Yeah, thanks for getting in touch. If you have anything else to get in touch with, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Now, this is where we possibly get the people turning off in droves, people offended, because we've dared to have a 15 selected, which is just opening up the opportunity for JB to say something defamatory, offensive. We've just coming off the back of Easter, so what about a religious 15?
Great idea.
Let's start in the front row. Like Jeff Cross.
We've all heard of
from Edinburgh.
Yeah,
Jeff Cross.
Because I've got Simon Cross in the back row and you've just taken the Cross bit. Especially when you can have Ewan Murray.
Ewan Murray or DJ Church.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
Keane Healy, known as DJ Church.
Or Samson Lee.
Oh, yes.
That's good. Samson Lee. Well done, you.
Largest face-to-head ratio of any
He's got a humongous head and a tiny face right in the middle. Yeah, Samson Lee.
I think DJ Church is actually
DJ Church, Keane Healy, definitely.
I quite like Samson Lee.
Samson Lee.
Samson from the Bible.
Samson, now what happened? What was the story with Samson? He was the one that had his hair cut off and lost his power, right?
I got it wrong last time. I mentioned him on the pod. Someone laughed at me on Twitter. So I tried to read up, but I just find it so boring reading about religious stuff.
Yeah, and I'm just not that into fairy tales. That's my big problem.
Given supernatural strength,
Ewan Murray
by God.
Would have made the 15, but on religious grounds, he's had to withdraw. a hooker. Have we got a hooker?
Two very tedious ones from me.
there is an Australian commentator got six caps in 1979-1980 called Buddha Handy.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Done.
That's good. That's miles better than my two.
What's yours?
I had Brendan Cannon.
Cannon's very good.
Yeah.
Catholic.
Cannon's, yeah, like a religious text. And Dave Ward.
Yeah, okay.
Probably like Congregation Ward.
Samson Lee, DJ Church, Buddha Handy then.
Perfect.
Done. Second row.
Deacon. Lewis Deacon.
Oh, yes.
Rod Fiddler. Make up your own mind.
Well, churches, they sometimes have violinists come in and play.
Yeah, I guess they do.
Who was Rod Fiddler?
Good question. Can't really remember.
He played for Gloucester.
Yeah, Gloucester, a long time, like 2004.
He was like a big mute second row. I had Brad Thorne.
Brad Thorne?
Thorny Crown.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. I've got two back rows, and I'm not going to say them.
Right, two from three of those second row. What are the back rows? Possible seven, Luke Abraham.
Yeah, very good.
Oh, wonderful. Well done.
Yeah. Nick Easter.
Yes. Yes, Nick Easter.
Mark Easter.
Yeah.
Mark Easter potentially at six, yeah.
And Brett Deacon, if we're going for brothers as well. Mm-hmm. Bit boring.
Go on, JB. What are your back
No
your
chance. Road? I'll tell you after.
All right, so hold on. We'll do what we did last time.
Let me put the on-hold music on. Don't put it on hold, because I don't even want people to think that I've said what I've said.
On. Okay, fine.
I had a Plymouth Albion flanker called Owen Grace.
Well, that went down well.
It's just a fact.
Well, what about let's switch Brad Thorne to six.
Okay.
Nick Easter at eight, Luke Abraham at seven. Then we've got Louis Deacon and Rob Fiddler in our second row. That's our pack. Oh, no! No! Hold the phone! Right, so we got Samson Lee, Buddha Handy, and DJ Church. We've got to pick our second row. Who do you go for?
Fiddler
and Deacon.
Deacon, yeah.
Right, fine. Back row. Okay, Lupe Abraham at seven. Nick Easter at eight. Six, Mamuka Gorgodza.
Oh, nice, Tim. Nice.
Done. Nine. Danny Kerr. Just because.
Because he cares.
Moses Rowlooney.
Yeah, Moses Rowlooney's a good one.
I put him to 10. I put Danny Kerr because there's loads of scandals with Christian care homes, so that's why I did it.
Let's leave that one.
No, okay.
There's a few other nines, though.
Yeah, go on.
Chris Pilgrim.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, yes.
Newcastle.
Godman.
Godman's a 10. Yeah.
Godman's a 10.
Isaac Boss. Isaac. Spanish Sevens player. We're called Angel Lopez.
Angel.
Angel.
Do you want to go Angel, Moses, Pilgrim?
Moses
Rowlooney at nine. Is it going to be Phil Godman or Rhys Priestland?
Oh, Rhys Priestland.
You could have the Johnny Wilkinson's a Buddhist.
I was going to say, he became Buddhist, yeah.
Is that serious?
No, this one it was a couple of years ago, before, when he was still at Newcastle.
No, he hasn't.
When he was injured, he found inner peace from becoming Buddhist, yeah.
I don't even know what that means. I literally don't know what that means.
They like peace and stuff like that, don't they?
Phil Godman.
Godman, yeah, easier.
Phil Godman at 10. Right, wings, or centres, let's do centres.
Centres. Could have the Bishop brothers.
Jonathan Joseph? I couldn't find a partner for him. I was looking for Mary for ages. I could find a Mary in women's rugby, but not in men's.
Mary Alfonso.
It's Maggie Alfonso.
Oh, sorry, it is Maggie. Apologies, Maggie.
Bishop and Joseph, unless you've got any more.
Bishop
Kevin Henson?
Go on.
Was in and out of church every day for a few years. Stuart Abbott.
Bishop, Joseph, Abbott.
Bishop and Abbott.
Fine. Good. I like that. Onto the wings then. There's quite a few here.
Israel Folau.
Yeah, Israel Folau.
And Dag.
Israel Dag.
Yeah.
Noah Cato.
Good.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good one.
Christian Cullen.
Oh, good.
Julian Surveyor, if you know, Saviour. I'm having a terrible time. Julian Saviour. Saviour.
Wordplay.
No. Sorry.
Jason Robinson as well. Very famous.
Oh, yeah.
And Inga Twigamala.
Yeah.
A lot of Tongans, Samoan, Fijians are incredibly. In fact, it was quite, like having spoken to a few people that are teammates with them, deeply, deeply religious, and a lot of them lead extremely humble kind of lives and send most of their earnings back home.
Yeah.
I know one being Calamophony at Gloucester,
Wow.
There you go. That makes you think, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Anyone got a coach?
Go on, who's coach?
Again, it's another rugby league one. Matt Parish.
Oh, nice.
Coach
of Salford.
You know
what's always confused me? Why has an Islamic symbol become such a big fixture in English rugby? And the one I'm talking about, of course, is Saracens.
Saracens, yeah.
Because it's not just Saracens. There's like Saracens up in... There's like Bristol Saracens. There's Saracens up in other land.
There's a few other religious clubs as well.
Go on.
Saints.
Yep.
Crusaders.
Yes, yeah, of course, Crusaders. I bet they don't get on well with Saracens.
No, that would be an epic battle.
Yeah,
the,
quite literally.
Crusaders versus the Saracens. There's Hindu rugby club in Argentina. And obviously Salford Red Devils.
Good. Solid.
Saracen's club name is said to come from the endurance, enthusiasm and perceived invincibility of Saladin's desert warriors of the 12th century.
Oh, wow.
Their local rivals were established and they were called something Crusaders, wherever they were, Marylebone Crusaders. So then Saracens popped up and called themselves Saracens to be the rivals of the Crusaders. And then the two amalgamated in the late 1800s. There you go.
Well done, Tim.
There you go.
Good knowledge.
No, I just Wikipedia is absolutely fantastic, but that is
fact.
Good. Well, there you go. I was going to say we managed to navigate a religious 15 without offending anyone, but it's probably not true. Thanks to JB's chat a bit earlier on. No, thanks for that, JB. Right, we're going to get to this weekend's action in just a minute, but we have, for a long, long time, since the very, very early days of the podcast, 30 episodes ago, feels like we've contributed to the rise of the cult of the Honey Badger, Nick Cummins, a.k.a. the Honey Badger. This is some of the amazing chat that we featured in the past.
When we're back on our line here, and we're D-ing like the boys in the trenches in Gallipoli there, at the end, they were just like that kid that fell out of the tree, you know, he just wasn't in it. I was chasing balls, I was busier than a one-armed bricklayer in Baghdad, mate. It was flat out.
The guy's amazing. Well, there was a documentary which I noticed was going to be on, which was called Honey Badger.
Was it about Nick Cummins?
Sadly, no. I wish it was. But Nick Cummins has basically said that he picked the nickname. He picked his own nickname, the Honey Badger.
He can do what he wants. He's a Honey Badger.
He picked his own nickname, the Honey Badger, because he saw a documentary about the Honey Badger and thought, that's a guy who's punches above his weight and is a tough rooster. Mm. Tough rooster. So I wanted to know a bit more about the Honey Badger, and I've got a few little facts about this animal.
According to the Guinness Book of Records, it is the world's most fearless animal.
That's an incredibly hard thing to judge, is it not? How would the Guinness Book of Records know this?
How do they determine fear? Fearless
animal death match?
Questionnaire. Yeah, I suppose that's the only sensible suggestion.
Yeah, but that doesn't determine fearless. That determines toughness.
Yeah, that's true. That ability to kill.
Yeah. It'd have to be some sort of questionnaire.
Yeah, it would be.
Even their special ability to sleep off snake bites and wake up unharmed remains a mystery.
So now, that is the lager and bitter concoction drank by the Western Force. Yeah?
I was going to say, I reckon that means, yeah, Nick Cummins can neck back the old snake bite on a night out and wake up the next morning feeling fine.
So the big drinkers.
Yeah, they have a few danger pints the night before a match and sleep it off.
Honey badgers, a quarter of their whole diet is venomous snakes, but they have this amazing thing when they do get bitten, they just go for a kip, wake up feeling fine.
Wowza.
Isn't it amazing?
If you push him in a corner, then he will go for you. He'll go for your balls, and you will get all your balls out one time, as quick as that.
Rip the canestus off a lion, mate. It's
a good excuse as well to send your missus out to chase off the honey badger.
He grabbed the rhino from underneath and wouldn't it go. And the rhino... He grabbed one of my tawny eagles. He wiped out 30, 40 guinea pigs one shot.
Hang on, this guy keeps guinea pigs and eagles in the same farm.
It's diverse.
30 or 40 guinea pigs in one go is pretty impressive.
And a couple of eagles dead as well.
Yeah. But he goes for lions as well.
He dug underneath the electric fence and went into the lions to fight them on purpose. So my staff took the meat and just chucked it over to get the lions' attraction on the meat. Meantime, the honey badger wouldn't let them settle down. He was going for their private parts at the back. And eventually the lion would turn around and grab him, but because the skin's loose, he'd swing in his skin, the honey badger, and bite the lion in the face. So in the end, the lion's bleeding down the face, the honey badger walking big stuff, and he won the first round. And they were scared of him.
Honey badgers are I'm not sure proper that this, nails.
I'm not sure that this guy, just from what he's saying and the fact he's got such a very... Imagine if your next-door neighbour had eagles and guinea pigs. Would you trust anything which they said?
Mm. Do you reckon he's been on the snake bites as well?
But there you go, that's the honey badger. You can understand the toughness of that animal and why Nick Cummins wanted to adopt the name.
Awesome.
Can sleep off snake bite, take on predators far bigger than itself, 10 times its size. A rhino, for goodness sake.
Yeah, these are... I'm just looking up the weights
why
of them.
Why do you even take on a rhino? I mean, they don't do anything to
anyone.
Well,
by the sounds of it, it wasn't going into the lion's enclosure to nick food. It dug under an electric fence.
After a few snake bites.
To get into a lion enclosure to go and fight a lion.
My word.
Unreal.
If it's taken on a rhino, so I'm just looking up the weights. A honey badger, they weigh up to 16 kg, which is...
Is that it?
Jay's got a chocolate lab and that's about 30 kg, right?
That's a kettlebell.
So I could take a honey badger.
16 kg is not a lot. I've just looked up a rhino weight. On average, they are 1,700 kg.
Right, this is not true.
That's 100 times bigger.
This just isn't true. I'm not having any of this. It's nonsense.
You think that guy is just making it all up?
I think he spent too long in the South African sun.
Right, on to matters rugby back once again and the upcoming matches this weekend. And it's the semi-final time in the European matches.
Mm.
Let's deal with the Amlin Challenge Cup and get that out of the way because it'll be a bit of an anti-climax going to that second. Northampton Harlequins.
I think there's a bit more of an incentive for Northampton to rest a couple of players. Harlequins, there's an outside chance. They're, 7 points behind Leicester?
Two bonus point wins and Bath to slip up.
And Bath, right, okay. So it's out of their hands. So I think Harlequins will 100% go for it.
All four teams go for it.
Northampton might rest a couple of people.
Well, you'd say on form it's going to be Bath versus Northampton in the final.
I think Harlequins might keep the wagon rolling.
And turn over...
Turn over Northampton?
Turn over Northampton.
Northampton's got the best 15.
At Franklin's Gardens, though.
Yeah, at Franklin's Gardens, that does make a difference.
Did anyone notice this week in Franklin's Garden, because obviously the TV camera's there, how small the away changing room is that London Irish were pitched in?
I'm going to stick my neck out and go Quins.
I'm going to say home win, Northampton to win.
Northampton for me.
Like you just mentioned then, Jay, I think Northampton, their starting 15 is arguably the best in the league.
It is, and they can play any game that they want. They can put out they can play the power game through Big Luth, or they can run around with PC and co.
Yeah, and they're big forwards. They can play the power game with Martafu and Laws and Dickinson
and Manoa. Ridiculous.
And exactly. Hartley and Waller.
Oh, yeah, they were Hartley. Yeah. And the other semi-final, Wasps against Bath. Wasps coming back into form. They're at home.
Yeah, and they're playing well. Well, they've got Ashley Johnson back, who's looking good.
Both Wasps and Bath have very much got everything to play for in the league.
Bath are playing well. I've said this for the last few weeks, and they've won their games.
I'm still going to go away.
The thing is with Bath, I feel every time they play now, it's not straightforward. I'm going to say Wasps.
I'm going to go Bath. Two away wins.
As much as I liked the performance by the Wasps back row, Nathan Hughes, Ashley Johnson,
and Haskell.
And Haskell with two tries. And I thought the all-round played pretty well. I think Bath should have the power up front and the skill and the guile in the backs to win it. I do like that Nathan Hughes, who got man of the match at the weekend. Mm. So he's Fijian and Samoan heritage, grew up in Australia, but has been living in England for a year now and is not capped for any country. So in 2016, he could potentially play for England. He's only 22 as well. He's 6'5 and 18 and a bit stone.
Crikey.
So he's quite a big lad.
He is a big slice.
He's a unit.
But he may well be capped by either Fiji or Samoa before the World Cup.
Should we talk Heineken Cup?
Yeah, come on then.
Let's do it.
Yes. Here we go.
Exciting.
Here we go.
I love this competition so much. I'm telling the way that our voices are picked back up. It's the real deal. Saracens, Claremont, 3:40 p.m. Saturday. This is titanic.
At Wembley, though, isn't it?
Twickenham.
Twickenham, sorry.
Claremont don't have their home advantage.
And they're monsters.
They're both monsters. They're both humongous.
See, I do like to give them stick for being a very boring team in terms of the way that they play, because they don't create much, do they? But I do love how they just suffocate. That defence can be awesome. Ulster went through something like 40 phases and got 5 yards. So they can really be just terrible to play against. Mm. I absolutely love that.
I think being at home is going to really level things up for them.
The French teams notoriously don't travel well.
They've got a lot of pressure on them because they need to win something.
After last year failing to win both the French League and the Heineken Cup.
Me, Saracens.
I'm going Clermont. I've got all away wins so far. Wow.
This is
accumulated time.
I think Saracens and Clermont, the battle up front should be reasonably evenly matched. They're both monstrous packs, but they should be able to hold each other.
Nalanga and Sivivartu on the wings, though. You know what I mean?
Now this,
yes, this is where they're exciting.
This is where the differences are. I think the differences are the wings for Clermont,
mm-hmm.
potentially inside centre for Clermont.
Because he's your man crush.
Yeah.
Fofana would run rings around Barrett.
If you're going to pick a back line...
To defend
and just shut these guys down, I wouldn't...
But how are Ashton and Strettel going to handle Sivivartu and Nalanga?
I'm not sure they're going to handle them going forward. Break any of their tackles, but actually I do think their defensive structure is such that they probably can.
I'm really looking forward to seeing Nick Abendanen
and besides
unleashed in that back three.
Yeah.
I think he could be really dangerous.
Nick Abendanen's quality.
He's a quality player, yeah. He really is.
You've got to remember that Ashton and Strettel won't be making the tackles. Berger will be making the tackles. he can tackle anything.
I'm going to go for Clermont as well. I'm going to go away win.
Wow.
What a game. And the other game, if it's possible to be better than that, I'm looking forward to Talon Munster even more. I mean, Munster shouldn't win. But Munster shouldn't be able to win. Talon should blow them away.
There's no reason why Munster should win. But they're going to. Oh, they look stupid again. Because I'm still going with Talon.
I can't look past Talon. But if Munster play the way they did against Toulouse, then they really could cause an unbelievable upset. I don't know what the odds are, it would be a huge shock for Munster to win.
Look at what they did to their Irish cousins, and the way that they just overpowered them.
Mm.
It was just frightening, actually, watching Rousseau carry the ball.
Talon against Leinster.
Yeah, you'd watch Rousseau carry the ball, and then you'd watch Armitage carry the ball.
And then Smith carry the ball.
Yeah,
and then Heymans, and then Sheridan.
If you picked a 15 out of the two teams, you wouldn't pick many Munstermen, with maybe a couple of exceptions.
Toulon for me. I wouldn't be surprised if Munster win it, but I think that's why it's such a great competition.
I'm Toulon as well. So based on what I've said, we'd have a repeat of last year's final. Clermont-Toulon.
Mm. Yep. Which, of course, we won't because it's going to be Toulon-Saracens.
Or Munster-Saracens. Or Munster-Clermont.
Yes. It's going to be one of those combinations.
I'm just trying to actually think of in the Munster squad, is there a single player with the exception of...
O'Connell.
Paul O'Connell that you would put from Munster put into a combined 15. I can't think of a single one.
O'Connell over Ali Williams or Botha?
I probably would put Paul O'Connell because the effect he has...
So, I think it's better than both the other guys we just mentioned.
I would put Paul O'Connell as well, like you say, Tim. He's such a leader.
If he was fit, would you put Peter Omani in?
Maybe
on form?
Yeah, probably.
Or, no, Juan Smith. You probably possibly put him in ahead of Juan Smith.
And also the captain who...
Yeah, probably on form. Omani was arguably the best back row in the Six Nations.
But other than that, I can't think of another player.
I do like Conor Murray.
Mini Mike.
Yeah, I do like him a lot. Mm. I just do, and that's the end of it.
Okay, that's all right.
I have liked Casey Lalala for years, actually. He's a bit of a kind of fading force, I think, now, but... He's been brilliant for a long time.
But over Bastereau and Gitto?
I'd probably have him over Bastereau.
Bastereau, though, as much stick as we keep giving him, keeps on winning and keeps on getting picked for damn good teams.
Yeah,
anyone who starts for Toulon, you've got to be fairly good.
Because when he gets his act together and his head on, he is so dangerous. But half the time he's dreaming of croissants and pan au chocolat.
Well, let's just go back a second. And how many Saracens players would get into a combined 15?
Ooh, good question.
Jacques Berger is in.
Jacques Berger would... you're probably right. He'd probably get in ahead of Vosloo or...
Front row, you could have...
Would Billy Vunipola get in?
I think so. I think he would, actually.
Yeah, probably would. Ahead of Fritzley or Cholley.
Yeah.
Cholley. In the front row, Thomas Domingo would probably... just out Mako Vunipola, probably based on experience.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, Brits. I mean, Brits is unlike anyone, so it depends how you want to play. I tell you where the head and shoulders above Saracens is second row.
Yes, agreed.
Oh, yeah.
Hines and Cudmore.
Well, there we go. We're going an all-French final. And even we can predict an all-English final in the Hamlin Challenge Cup.
I'm confident of it.
And there we go for another Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. That was episode 30. Thank you very much for listening. And get in touch, tell us what you reckon to the 15, to if you want to direct any religious-based letters of complaint, then address them to JB at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, and he'll pick up them all and read them and then reply one by one. Yeah. Excellent. Well, we'll leave it there. And yeah, get in touch and we'll see you on the next one. Thanks for listening. Nice one, JB.
Bye.
Nice one, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
In a bit.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.